Hello, I'm Ariet Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to a wide range of wellness professionals ready to inform and inspire. Today's topic is Lino in Sport, Solving Recurring Injuries and Optimizing Performance. My guest is Benita Kropman, physiotherapist and founder and director of the Lino Method, speaking from Cape Town. Welcome back on the show, Benita.
Thank you so much for inviting me again to talk about Lino in Sport. It's really such a privilege to be back on your podcast again.
Thank you, Benita. And to our listeners, after our conversation, it will be fun question time. Benita, as I've said, you're on the show a second time, and we had a previous podcast about a holistic approach that relieves chronic pain and recurring injuries called the Lino Method. Could you summarize the Lino Method?
Well, you know, the Lino Method has evolved so much over the past 28 years since I started to develop it. And every month almost, I have to really look at what does the Lino Method entail? What does it involve? But the basis of the Lino Method that has stayed the same ever since I started to develop the method in 1997 is an holistic assessment of the whole body. And I found in 1997 that chronic injuries and recurring injuries and chronic pain, we can never solve that by looking at the site where the pain is, the site where you're getting injured. We've got to look at the whole body. And that is basically the essence of the Lino Method, is we do a full body assessment to find out where in the body does the cause of that chronic pain, that chronic recurring injury, where is that cause hiding? And that is where we focus our work on. And it's basically, when we look at the whole body and assess the whole body, we're assessing connective tissue mobility. So to see where in your body can you move and where can you not move. And that's the important part, because if ever there is an area in your body where movement is restricted, that then causes pain and injuries and chronic recurring injuries in a different area. So that's basically the essence, is we are going to look at the whole body to find out where is the cause of your chronic and recurring pain and injuries.
Yeah, and in the previous podcast, you explain all this at length and what causes these fascia contractions and so on. But today, we're focusing on sport. And I know that since the beginning of your career, you've been working with elite athletes. I would like you to tell us why, in terms of sport-related injuries, the 1996 Olympic Games in Atlanta was quite a reality check for you.
Yes, that's always my favorite part when I have to speak or speak about the history of the Lino Method, and that's Atlanta 1996. In 1996, when the Atlanta Olympics took place, I've already been a qualified physiotherapist focusing on sports injuries for about 13, 14 years as a physiotherapist. So I was treating all my sportsmen and sportswomen exactly in the way that we were trained as physiotherapists, which means that if somebody gets injured, I diagnose the injury. I would call it a runner's knee or an Achilles tendonitis or whatever it is. And then I would have a recipe that I would use to treat that specific injury. And so I've been preparing a lot of elite athletes for the Atlanta Olympic Games, hoping that they would get all their medals and that they would perform very well. But then what happened in Atlanta, I had two athletes that went to the Atlanta Olympic Games, the one in the marathon and the one was going to do the 800 meters on the track. And both of these athletes were expected to medal at the Olympic Games. Now, in the preparation for the Atlanta Olympic Games, they did show all their old recurring injuries. But because I was a physio experienced in dealing with these sports injuries, I was working mainly with elite athletes at the time. I knew exactly how to very quickly fix that injury and get them back into training again. But when they arrived in Atlanta, and I didn't go to Atlanta that year to the Olympic Games. When they arrived in Atlanta, I wasn't there to keep looking after them and making sure that their bodies are aligned and relaxed, et cetera, et cetera. And suddenly, when they got to the final and to the final marathon event, their bodies suddenly seized up and started to show those old recurring injuries again. And I wasn't there to quickly take care of that. And that then caused them to come back with injuries and not with medals. So that was really a turning point, because both of them came to me and said, but, you know, we've become so dependent on you. If you are not there to fix our injury quickly, then we are basically stuck. And that's what made me thought, but maybe the approach that we have in physiotherapy, I mean, and actually in the whole conventional medical approach, is that chronic injuries or recurring injuries should maybe be treated or approached in a different way. So the way I was treating a chronic injury was exactly the same way that I would approach a normal acute injury. And maybe that was not right. So then I decided to go back to the drawing board and to see, is there not a different way of approaching this? And I really had to, my athletes have been all over the world. They've been to chiropractors, to osteopaths, to all over the world where people were specializing in sports injuries. And I've also traveled with them and I've seen a lot of different ways of dealing with sports injuries. But none of that actually had that permanent effect of dealing with a recurring injury so that it doesn't keep coming back. And that I realized was a kind of a gap in the medical approach. And I needed to find a way out of that. And that's when I decided I'm going to actually start and experiment on these two top world athletes and see if there isn't another way. And that's where the whole Liner method was born, basically in 1997 after the games. I started to look at the whole body. I started to test the whole body to see what the core strength is like in the whole body and what the mobility is like in the whole body. And I suddenly came to, it surprised me completely when I looked at the results of this, because suddenly I saw that where the one might have hip pain, say right hip pain, there was a shoulder on the opposite side, on the left side, that was restricted, where the movement was restricted. And couldn't that then be the reason why the hip kept coming back? And in my other athlete, we had an Achilles issue. And again, when I looked at her, I saw that when I assessed the whole body to see how she is moving and whether any of the movement is restricted in the whole body, I found in the opposite hip that there was a restriction. And when I started to link this, you know, the restrictions to the symptoms, I realized that if I can take all my chronically injured or athletes with recurring injuries and I look at their full body assessment, I could actually with each of them find that there is a restriction somewhere else in the body that could be the cause of this chronic recurring injury. And that changed the game for me completely. And then when I started to get exposed to the fascia, which is the connective tissue that surrounds the whole body, then everything started to fall in place, because suddenly there was a connection between every part, each and every part of the body, where our normal approach would be, okay, you have knee pain, so let's have a look at the knee, maybe at the ankle, because the ankle could maybe affect the knee, or maybe at the hip. But we never really, in conventional medicine, look at the whole body and consider that maybe the neck could have an effect on the ankle, or any part of it. But when the focus started to shift, and I mean, it didn't shift in so much in conventional medicine, but there was a huge group of doctors and physios and all kinds of medical modalities who started to question this at the same time in the early 2000s. And when we all started to look at fascia, which is the connective tissue that connects everything in the body, then we started to realize that maybe the shoulder could cause an issue in the opposite ankle, or maybe the hip that's restricted, where fascia was restricted, the connective tissue was restricted, could then cause an issue in the opposite side of the body. So the Atlanta Olympic Games was actually the turning point for me, where I had to actually come up with a new answer, because I cannot wait for the next Olympic Games and then send people with previously recurring injuries and then they get injured again at the Games. I needed to find a way to keep them clear of recurring injuries, and Atlanta was the key.
Yeah. And regarding sports injuries, you have defined two categories. What are they?
Yeah, you know, in sports injuries, you get acute injuries and then you get chronic injuries. So acute injuries would normally be the injury started, my knee got sore yesterday, my ankle got sore yesterday, something that's happened in the past 2-3 weeks. So that's an acute injury. There's normally pain involved. There's often swelling involved. You can't stand on the leg. But that's an acute, a new injury. And then the chronic injuries are the injuries that's been there for a long time, normally a few weeks or even a few months or even a few years. So that's the two kind of categories. You know, and in medicine, we actually deal with those injuries in exactly the same way. So, whereas they should actually be dealt with in a completely different way.
Which categories can acute injuries consist of?
Yeah, and that's the interesting one. You know, with acute injuries, so say now you have got knee pain and you come to see me with knee pain and the knee started getting sore last week, then there are two different reasons for that knee to become sore. You either fell on your knee, so it was an impact injury, so there would be swelling. There's a definite action connected to that injury or to that pain. The other one is the spontaneous injury. So you come in and say, you know what, Benita, I've been walking every day, but suddenly I walked on Saturday, I didn't even change my shoes, I didn't change anything, but all of a sudden, my knee started getting sore, spontaneously, with no reason whatsoever, or no reason that I am aware of. So that's the big difference. And the spontaneous injury is the difficult one. And the spontaneous injury normally points to the chronic injury. It normally points to something else in the body, because there was no direct impact. And those are the injuries that are the difficult ones and are the ones that most sports people struggle with continuously, the spontaneous injury.
Focusing on chronic injuries, Benita, why are they so difficult to solve?
I think with chronic injuries, you know, they're difficult to solve not because they are so difficult, but because of an incorrect approach. So a chronic injury, say now you come to me and you have chronic knee pain. It started spontaneously, as we've said before. It could have also even been with an impact, but it started a while ago and it's just not healing. So if it's just not healing, we learn in medicine that any soft tissue injury should heal within 3 to 6 weeks. And if there is an injury to the bone, that would heal within 6 to 12 weeks. That's the normal, if you look at musculoskeletal injuries, that's the normal healing period for injuries. If, however, you come to me and say, you've got pain in your hamstring, and that hamstring pain has been there already for, say, at least 2 months, that a hamstring injury is a soft tissue injury. So if there was an injury there, it should heal within 3 to 6 weeks. If you come and say that it's been there for 2 months, it means it is not healing. And why is it not healing? Something is causing it not to heal. It's not like you are jumping over a rock or something and you are keep injuring it all the time. There's something else in the body that is causing it not to heal. And that's where a chronic injury becomes very difficult if you are going to approach it in the old conventional way of, all right, you have a hamstring injury, and here is the recipe for hamstring injuries. We are going to use some electrotherapy on it. We will do some forms of massage on it. We will do some stretching or exercises to strengthen it. But the whole focus is then on that specific hamstring, on that specific area. And none of the focus is on trying to find the reason or the cause of this injury, because a chronic injury means it's basically getting injured all the time. And it's not with impact, it's spontaneous. So spontaneously, it's getting injured all the time. And that's where the difference comes in. So what then is causing that injury all the time? And if you do not do a full body assessment to go and find out, where is this alignment issue? Where is this locked up fascia in the body that's causing the spontaneous injury? If you don't follow that approach, then you are not going to solve that injury. And that is what happens, you know, when you try to solve a chronic injury with an acute injury approach by focusing, diagnosing the localized symptoms. So decide, all right, this must be a chronic hamstring tear, and then treating it with a localized approach. That is when chronic injuries become a real, real problem, specifically when it comes to elite athletes who need to perform all the time.
And now it's clear why you said that chronic and recurring injuries should be approached from a holistic point of view, right?
Yes, definitely, definitely. When it comes to an impact injury, in that sense, one can follow the traditional conventional approach, because there is an impact. There's nothing else in the body that could have caused it. You fell on your knee, you sprained your ankle. That can be dealt with in that old traditional localized approach. But with a chronic injury, you cannot do that. You are definitely not going to solve it that way.
I thought to ask you if you could tell us one of the success stories from those early Lino days.
Oh, there are so many of them. You know, I have worked for at least about 20 years after I developed the Lino method, and with a lot of elite athletes, local elite athletes, and also elite athletes from abroad. I'm trying to think now, one of my very, very first success stories was that of one of our cricket players. And I can give you his name because he has been such a wonderful advertisement for Lino over the years. And that's Charles Langeveld. Now, Charles is one of the Protea cricketers. He also recently was one of our bowling coaches of the Protea team. But Charles approached me right in the early days of Lino with a very, very difficult problem. I think he was just chosen to be part of the Protea team. Maybe he hasn't played for them yet. I can't remember exactly. But he was just chosen for the Protea team as a bowler. And obviously, he's in his early 20s, and he is going to do everything to make sure that he becomes one of the best bowlers in the Protea team and that he doesn't lose his spot in the team. So that meant that he's ended up in the nets bowling for at least 6 hours every day. And while he was doing that, he suddenly started to feel pain in his back, in between his shoulder blades, but also pain in the lower lumbar area. And this pain just increased and increased, and he was receiving physiotherapy treatment for that, and it got a little bit better. But then as soon as he started to train again, it just got worse and worse. And eventually the pain got so bad that he actually couldn't bowl at all. And he ended up going to the best sports doctors in Cape Town, and they did some MRI tests and some x-rays and everything, and came with a very, very bad diagnosis of stress fractures in the thoracic spine one and another one in the lumbar spine. And the outcome or the advice from the sports doctor: stop playing cricket immediately, because if these stress fractures become real fractures, you may actually even end up being paralyzed eventually. So this is like a death sentence to a young man who has just been chosen for the national team. And I mean, this is really a dream come true. And now this dream is ended just like that. But then at that time, you know, when I've just started the Liner method and I just started to get very good results with chronic injuries, I got this reputation that if the doctor says stop running and you must rather just cycle because your knees are not made for running, go see that weird physio in Stellenbosch because she's got this different way of working. And if the doctor says no, she'll say, no, I don't think so. Let's see. Maybe there is a yes. Maybe there is still a chance. So anyway, Charles ended up visiting me in Stellenbosch to come and see if I could not maybe give him a different diagnosis or a different opinion. And it was so interesting when I did the full body assessment on him, there was a definite lock up in a spiral pattern because of all the bowling. So if you take the body and you spiral it and spiral it and spiral it and overtrain it completely, 6 hours in the nets all of a sudden, then the body, the brain actually decides to start protecting the body. And it protects the body by forming a kind of a bracing in the connective tissue. So the connective tissue would try and support and hold and brace, almost like strapping up the body to try and protect it because you are overusing it in this one specific movement so much. So when I did the assessment of his body, I could clearly see how he's almost twisted and twisted and twisted his body so badly that eventually the bone cracked in the thoracic area and in the lumbar area. So definitely, when they would take an X-ray or do an MRI of that, that will show up. It will show up that there is a stress fracture and a crack in the vertebrae. And yes, if you look at a crack in the vertebrae, I would imagine that the first thing the doctor would say is, you've gone too far and there's nothing we can do for you. But looking from a fascia point of view and from an holistic point of view, the approach can be completely different. So all I needed to do was to untwist him, to release that fascia and get him, almost get the body to face forward again and not be in that full twist. And by doing that, we took the pressure off the bone. And within about 6 weeks, he was back bowling, no more pain. And I then only showed him exactly how to untwist his body every time after he has been spending 6 hours in the bowling, in the bowling nets. So if he twists the body for 6 hours and he comes out of the nets, and I have shown him exactly how to untwist it so that the connective tissue doesn't brace up to try and support him, then he starts with a new, clean, clear, untwisted body every time he goes into the nets. But if he doesn't do that, every time he goes into the nets, he twists it a bit further and further and further, and that's how he got that injury. So that was the most amazing result there, because suddenly Charles could play again. I mean, and he ended up with a magnificent career playing county cricket in England. He ended up playing for the IPL in India. He is at the moment a coach in India for the IPL series. I mean, he's had a magnificent career. I've seen him once a year when he sort of came through Cape Town and just came to visit me, and we had a look at his body quickly. With no restrictions, no fascia restrictions, he never ever had any back pain again. And just because we have looked from an holistic point of view. There were many stories like that. I mean, I don't know if you would like me to tell you another one maybe.
Yes, you're welcome.
Okay, let me see. Oh, another very interesting one was, it was also in the early part when I was really working with elite athletes. I was starting to get very good results with a lot of the UK athletes who came to Stellenbosch in the early, sort of in the 90s and the early 2000s. And when I started to get these good results, one of the athletes heard about an elite athlete in the UK who was struggling with chronic, I think she had Achilles injuries, all kinds of different stress fractures, all kinds of injuries, chronic injuries. And she was actually someone who, if not injured, would have performed very well at the World Championships and in the Olympic Games. So she then convinced this athlete to come down to Stellenbosch for 2 months and see if maybe I could not help her. And it was so interesting. She walked into the practice early one morning and she had a talk bag with her. And she put the talk bag down on the table and she opened it up and she took out, I think it was almost about 12 different pairs of inner soles. You know, those orthopedic inner soles that you put into your running shoe. And she said to me, she was actually a physiotherapist, although she's never practiced. She trained and then decided to become a professional athlete. But she said to me, if it wasn't for these inner soles, wouldn't be able to ever train, because the moment she starts getting her first symptom on the track, while she was even warming up just for a training session on the track, she would say, show up an Achilles pain. Then she would use one specific pair of inner soles to help her with that Achilles pain. But now running, carrying on with her warm up in that inner sole, then started to cause knee pain, say on the right knee. For the knee pain, she had a different pair of inner soles. So she would put that into the shoes, train then, and then suddenly the hip would start paining. And so she had all these different pairs of inner soles that she used depending on which training session she was doing, because there were pains sort of showing up in all different areas in her body. And I have never actually seen anything like that. I mean, a lot of the international athletes used to come with chronic pain and show me their inner sole straight away. So the inner sole was actually there to try and give them the same bracing effect as what I find the connective tissue gives. If you have, for instance, sprained your ankle and the connective tissue would sort of brace your body to try and protect you from not hurting that ankle more, then you end up in this bracing pattern, which would then eventually cause other issues in your body. Similar to how Charles Langefeld's body would brace up when he was doing all that excessive training, the body braces up to try and give him that support. So these inner soles were used by these athletes and still used a lot today to try and protect them, give them a kind of protective pattern so that they do not keep injuring whatever the issue is that they were given the inner soles for. But what happens is if you get a bracing pattern or you get an inner sole, that would cause you to use your body in a different compensation pattern. And compensation patterns means that you put a lot of different load on your knees and your hips and your shoulders and the rest of your body. And that then would cause another compensation pattern. And the new compensation pattern would have other side effects. So eventually, you start running out of all these compensation patterns. There are so many layers of them. And eventually, you are an athlete in chronic pain and you cannot train at all. Now, this is what I saw when this UK athlete arrived. And she showed me all these different pairs of inner soles, which is almost acting like this compensation pattern would help for that side effect. And then that compensation help for that side effect. So what I did is I confiscated all these inner soles and said, this is never going to work. Let us get your body back into the neutral position. Let us remove all the bracing of the connective tissue in your body, get you back into the neutral position, and then train up your body like that and see what happens then. And within 2 months, we were able to build up her strength in a neutral body, and she was one of the athletes, one of the only athletes in the history of the Olympic Games who went to 5 different Olympic Games and always ended up in the finals of her event. So the most amazing story, and the lovely thing about that was her husband was her coach, and I actually managed to show him exactly how to do the holistic assessment of Lino, release the patterns, if there were any patterns building up because of overtraining and overuse, and he managed to maintain her for year after year after year, Olympic game after Olympic game after Olympic game. So she was really one of the most difficult cases that I saw, with so many different injuries, and eventually became one of the best performing athletes, hardly ever injured after that.
Truly amazing. Now, Benita, you once said that combining a unilateral sport and a bilateral sport always creates the possibility of injuries. Could you explain this?
Yes, you know, and this is something that I so often see. And I'm very much talking now about somebody who would be, say, a marathon athlete or, let's first use the example of a marathon athlete. Now, when you are a marathon athlete, you are running most of the time in a forward direction. You're not running around in circles like a track athlete, going around and around the track in exactly the same way, turning towards the left. Marathon athletes use their left arm and leg similar to the way they use their right arm and leg. So they need to develop the strength in both legs and both arms and the rest of their body equally so that there would be no alignment issues and therefore also no chronic injuries. Marathon athlete now decides, and I'm talking very much a quite committed performing marathon athlete, if they would decide that they are going to start playing squash as well. Now, if they play squash, that would suddenly involve a rotation movement mainly towards the one side. So they would be twisting the body in one direction all the time, meaning that they develop strength and most probably bracing, normally due to a little bit of overtraining, in one direction, which means that within a very short time, the left arm and leg is going to perform slightly different to the right arm and leg. And I can see that when I then do the line assessment, there would be a difference in mobility, in range of movement, when I compare the left arm to the right arm, because suddenly the right arm becomes sort of twisted up, just like I spoke earlier of Charles Langefeld with the bowling. The arm becomes slightly twisted up to protect it because the right arm, for instance, is moving a lot more than the left arm and in a twisted position. So whenever an athlete would do an action, a repetitive action, like for instance, playing tennis or playing golf or playing squash, or even if you are a swimmer and you breathe to the one side only, your left side and your right side will develop differently. And if you are doing it repetitively, there is a very big chance that your connective tissue will start to respond to that by bracing and causing some limitations to try and support you in this new twisting action towards the one side. Now, if you are a marathon athlete and you want to perform as a marathon athlete, you need very, very good alignment if you don't want any injuries. If you start playing squash and you're starting to add a bracing pattern into your body that makes the one leg move different to the other and the one arm moving different to the other, you are really looking for trouble. And a lot of times I see this where I have marathon athletes who suddenly start doing a different action where they use repetition in specifically in a spiral rotation on the body. It becomes the cause of recurring and a chronic injury. So I always make sure that if I have an athlete who is doing a bilateral, meaning using the left and the right side equally, a bilateral sport, to try and keep them away from doing unilateral sport where they use the one side more than the other, just to make sure that the alignment remains neutral. And you know, another place where I see this often, I have just come back from Kenya, where I have worked with a lot of the Kenyan athletes. Now, most of the Kenyan athletes start their running career in school already, where they will be doing a lot of track athletics. And the Kenyans are very good with middle distances and eventually with longer distances. So all these kids, even when they are very young, they don't do sprinting at school, but they do the shorter middle distances while they are at school, which means, and they train quite hard, repetitively around the track, running towards the left, so running in the anti-clockwise direction. This causes a slight rotation, spiral rotation on the body, because if you run around in that oval kind of circle, oval track, your left side of your body runs in a different way and moves in a different way to the right side. And when I look at these athletes, when eventually they become marathon athletes, where the left and the right side should move equally in order not to be injured, I find on their bodies, if they are starting to show chronic injuries as marathon athletes, that the body is still braced up in the track position. So I would see a typical bracing where the left arm has a tendency to move backwards more and the right arm have a tendency to move forward more, which is exactly what happens when you are running on the track towards and turning towards the left all the time. So if I, for instance, have a marathon athlete who still goes to the track to do their track, their speed work on the track, and the brain remembers, when I'm on the track, I must use the right arm like this and I must use the left arm in a different way. It braces up again in that position. And when tomorrow they try to do a long run and try to do some speed work in the long run, suddenly the body, the bracing affects the body and some of the muscles start saying, we cannot work like this. And then they start getting all their different niggles. So it is so important if you do want to perform very well and at a high level in a bilateral sport, not to combine that with a unilateral sport. I'm not talking about just doing a little bit of cricket with your friends in the street or somewhere. I'm talking about doing a regular practice, adding a regular practice and quite an intense practice to your marathon training that could cause the alignment issues and eventually cause chronic and recurring injuries.
That is so sensible. Benita, how essential is stretching?
Now, stretching is another story. You know, something that I always tell my athletes, when I do my subjective assessment and I ask them, first chat to them a little bit about, you know, their opinion of the injury and where they think it comes from. I normally ask the question, so do you stretch? And then most would then say, oh, yes, of course, I'm an athlete. Of course, I stretch. And then I said, right, won't you tell me what you stretch? And most of them would then say, oh, I stretch my hamstrings, I stretch my calves, and maybe I stretch my arms in a specific way. And then I say, and do you stretch your hip flexors? No, I don't stretch my hip flexors. Or do you stretch your quads? No, I don't stretch my quads. So I write all of that down. And when I eventually test their bodies to see what is short, and what is long, because my holistic assessment shows that up beautifully. Most of the time, they are stretching what is long and not what is short. So if you have this alignment issue, this bracing pattern, which is causing your chronic injuries, the way it shows up on the liner assessment is that certain parts of your movements would show up as limited. So you do not have full range there. So say now I would explain it. The one hamstring, for instance, would show up shortened. It can only move through X amount of degrees. And then the other hamstring, the opposite hamstring, would show up as a long hamstring. So fully stretched or fully mobile. So most of the time, when I then do the assessment, I find that the muscles that show up very long in the assessment are the ones that they stretch all the time. Mm. And the muscles that show up short are the ones that they do not stretch. So yes, stretching is fine, but what happens if you are stretching what is long, you actually make what's long even longer. And if you then ignore what is short, you are actually contributing to the alignment problem. So if you knew what was short in your body and you were stretching what is short, that's fantastic. Then you are not playing into the injury pattern. But most of the time, athletes are stretching what is long and not what is short. And the reason for that is if any muscle is stuck in a long position, it means that it would have to use muscle spasm to try and simulate a contraction. So muscles stuck in the long position cannot contract properly. And because they have that continuous muscle spasm reaction, that feels tight for the athlete. And because it feels tight, they want to stretch it. And because it is long, when they stretch it, they get a great feeling of stretch because it allows a lot of stretching because there isn't a lot of tone in that muscle. Whereas if they are trying to stretch something that is short, the fascia, the connective tissue, is holding it in a bracing pattern. It's not going to allow stretching at all. So you don't get that feeling of stretch. But in long muscles, or muscles stuck in a long position, you would feel that long, nice stretch. And that is the feeling that the athlete would go for. They want to feel that they are stretching properly. But in the meantime, they are actually stretching themselves into more non-alignment and to a more injury-prone body.
That is very interesting. Another question, Benita, how does treadmill running compare with running outside?
That's also very interesting. And you know, we see that so often in the winter months. I mean, athletes decide in the winter, it's too cold outside and they don't want to stop their training. So the best option for them is to just go on the treadmill. Now, you know, if you look at the fascia, at the way fascia works, the moment you start to do repetition of a specific movement and you push quite hard in that, the fascia and the survival brain actually always is on the alert to try and make sure that the body is in a safe position. And the survival brain then uses the connective tissue to try and support you by bracing up in a supportive position. Now, if you are on a treadmill and you run on a treadmill, you move your leg forward and put your foot down on the treadmill, and the treadmill then takes your foot back all the way until you lift your foot up again and you bring it forward. Now, when you put your foot down and the treadmill brings your leg backwards, you do not need to contract your glutes or your hamstrings or your calves, really, because the treadmill is doing that action for you. It automatically brings the leg backwards. So the only time when you really need to move your leg is when you lift it up and you bring it forward to put it down, back down on the treadmill again. So that means that you are using your hip flexor in the front and your quadriceps and the muscles at the front of your calf that would lift the foot up and bring the foot forward. So in fact, on a treadmill, the muscles that are doing the work are the front muscles in the leg, whereas the back muscles gets a lovely free ride on the treadmill. They hitchhike all the way backwards. So if you keep doing that and you don't really have to carry the body weight on the front muscles, so they are up in the air while the body weight is on the leg that is been moving backwards by the treadmill, the front muscles get fitter and fitter, but without body weight. So that at the end of the time, you can actually run very fast on the treadmill because you're not using that much muscle strength, or you don't need that much muscle strength. When you then go out on the road again and you put your foot down, there is no treadmill that will take you backwards. Suddenly now the glutes and the hamstrings and the calves that's done no work throughout the whole winter season on the treadmill have to now not only carry the body weight, but also pull the weight forward while the foot stays stationary on the ground. So while your lungs are nice and fit and while your front muscles are nice and fit, the muscles that actually takes the weight and the muscles that will actually needs to push you forward have done no training throughout the whole winter. And if you try to run at the same pace as what you were using or running on the treadmill, you are definitely going to run into problems very quickly because those muscles will be overstrained very, very quickly when you are on the road. And that is why so many people get injured, hamstring injuries, calf injuries, even glute injuries, the moment they step off the treadmill and go back on the road. And then another thing is I see so many athletes do their long runs on the road, but then they decide because the treadmill can help you to pace yourself very well, they go and they do their speed sessions on the treadmill. Now, when you do a speed session on the treadmill, where you can set the treadmill to run, to move quite fast, again, you are not using your hamstrings, your glutes, and your calves. You are only using the front of your legs, so your hip flexors and your quads and the calves. So you are not using the muscles that you actually need when you are doing speed training or when you are running fast on a solid surface. And so often, if you've done all your wonderful speed work on the treadmill and you step out on the outside on the ground and you try to run at the same pace, you immediately get a calf or a hamstring injury. So again, this is a matter of the connective tissue bracing actually to shorten the front muscles, because those are the muscles that work all the time, whereas the muscles at the back, the hamstrings, the glutes, and the calves, actually become stuck in a longer inactive position. And then when they suddenly have to contract rapidly, they say, but sorry, we can't do that. And that's when you start getting your injuries. So it is so, so important to make sure that the activities you do would involve exactly the muscles that you need for your marathon or your running. And that's why treadmill running, to me, if you are only going to run on a treadmill, yes, then you do not need the hamstrings or the glutes or the calves as much as running off the treadmill. So if only running on the treadmill is going to be your goal, then there's not a problem, because then that's what you need to be strong for. But definitely not train on a treadmill if you want to be on the road and want to run fast on the road.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. This section, Up Close and Personal, on my website, offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients, or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. To each listener, no matter your age, occupation, or where you live, how about creating your very own personal audio recording with me as a one-of-a-kind gift to someone you deeply care for? In this private interview with me, you can express your love for your partner, leave a legacy to your children or grandchildren, honor your mum or dad or a mentor. The possibilities are endless. To find out more, just click on Gift Podcasts on my website. Now, back to my guest. And then a very important question, Benita. What is your view on training shoes?
Training shoes. My view on shoes in general is that we should not be wearing shoes at all. You know, it's so interesting, Mariette, that if you look at the hand, our hand has 27 little joints. And the reason why it has so many little joints is because we need to be able to do many intricate little movements with our hands and with our fingers. Now, if I have to ask you a question and guess how many bones do you have in your foot, would you think that that is more than 27 or less than 27?
I would think less.
Okay. Surprise, surprise. There's 33 little joints in the foot. And that means that we are actually designed to be able to use the foot almost more than using the hand. And I mean, we so often see people that are born without arms who use their feet to paint and to do all wonderful, intricate little movements with their feet because they have actually developed it. But because we do not do that, I mean, babies use their feet and toddlers use their feet to walk on, and that's about it. I mean, we use our hands for all the intricate movements. But the moment we start putting our feet into a rigid shoe when we are very young, we start to lose all those intricate actions in the foot. We never, ever developed it properly. And the foot is actually the keyboard of the movement of the whole body. We have underneath the foot a lot of what we call proprioceptors, and those are little nerve endings that give the information to the brain exactly to show where we are putting the weight, are we leaning forward, are we leaning backwards. It gives all the information about our position on the earth as we are standing or walking or whatever we're doing in a weight-bearing position. So if we put the foot in a rigid shoe and in a shoe where the toes can also not move properly, it means that we take away most of those proprioceptive action and the brain really receives very little information from the foot, and the brain has to do a lot of guessing on where are we, and that's why we become less and less stable and less balanced as years go by. So if we have children who grow up in a rural situation where they do not have access to very rigid shoes and they are actually able to use their feet properly as they grow up, we end up with adults who have very good balance, who are very strong and whose core strength is very good. But children who grow up in rigid shoes do not have all that stability and all that balance and all that core strength. Now, when it comes to athletes, if you can imagine an athlete who wants to run a very fast marathon, the more information they can get from their foot, the better. So if you have an athlete who is now stuck in a shoe, which is, I mean, if you go into a running shoe shop, they will very quickly ask you if you want a shoe that has some motion control, a more supportive shoe. Now, what happens if you have a more supportive shoe and a more rigid shoe is you take away that proprioceptive information, which means that the athlete has less access to proper muscle function than if they were to wear a shoe that has more mobility and more flexibility. So for me, it makes absolute no sense to put an athlete in a rigid shoe, and specifically in a shoe that tried to limit specific movement, the normal rolling movement, which starts on the outer heel, roll forward and push off from the big toe. That rolling movement is so, so, so important. And I see with not only with the shoes that we see in the shops, I mean, the shoes that we use to walk around in all day, but also the running shoes are becoming more and more rigid. Years ago, there was a guy who wrote a book. The book was called Born to Run. And in that book, he actually addressed this whole issue of rigid running shoes. And he compared the current athletes at the time to athletes in rural settings where they run with very, very flexible sandals. And they were running much further with very few injuries, whereas runners who ran in all the rigid motion control shoes were showing lots and lots of injuries, and they couldn't run nearly as well as the athletes from the rural areas. So he then started to say, why don't we all go back to barefoot shoes? And that became quite a huge thing in the world a few years ago. And suddenly we found these companies like Vibram, the Vibram company in Italy, started this five-finger shoe range where your toes would be in separate little sections, and it enabled your foot to move the toes separately and to really roll the foot the way it was supposed to roll. And they were saying, if you are going to wear these shoes, you will not have any injuries at all. But what happened then is people were using rigid shoes since childhood, then went into rigid running shoes, and all of a sudden now they have this whole idea of we need to have stronger feet, and they go into barefoot shoes. But because they do not have the strength or the mobility, they suddenly start to get a lot of injuries. So then that meant that the barefoot shoe situation was also not a solution. We needed to first mobilize those feet a little bit, or a lot actually, and then build up the strength as we mobilize the feet to eventually get them back to fully functional feet, and that will then give you a very strong athlete. So there is such a controversial issue at the moment in it when it comes to shoes, because on the one hand, the shoe manufacturers are bringing out more and more models of motion control shoes. I mean, at the moment, there are even these carbon plate shoes where there is even more motion control and a carbon plate that helps you to bounce off the shoe and make you run faster in a marathon. So the shoe manufacturers are moving more and more towards the shoe must do the work for you and your foot should not be doing any work. And then we have, on the other hand, the barefoot shoe companies who say, all your injuries will be gone if you use barefoot shoes. Just leave your other shoes behind, go into barefoot shoes, and you will find immediately you can run faster and you have no more injuries. So both of these are actually incorrect, because if you have a rigid foot now, you cannot just go and suddenly run in a shoe that gives you no support. We have to actually move back towards a barefoot shoe, but slowly, gradually, making the shoes less and less inflexible, more and more flexible, so that we can regain the strength and the mobility of our feet and get more information from the keyboard, the sole of the foot, and then make us stronger athletes. So as you can hear, it is such a controversial and such a wide subject, the shoes. But the most important thing for me is to convince parents to not put their children in inflexible shoes, in rigid shoes, but to help us get the new generation to use their feet properly, to keep the mobility, to keep those keyboards going, so that hopefully in the next generation, we can get rid of all these rigid shoes that actually takes away so much of the natural ability of the body.
Now, Benita, if a listener wants to optimize their sports performance or sort out an injury, maybe a recurring injury, but they have no idea where to start, what would you advise?
The most important thing is to find the cause of that injury. And this is where I suggest that you go and see a practitioner who works in the sports field and who has a holistic approach. So in the Liner method, I mean, all my practitioners are trained up, you know, using a holistic approach. But there are also other modalities. Chiropractors normally move towards a holistic approach. Osteopaths move towards a holistic approach. A lot of biokineticists move towards a holistic approach. But it is so important to have a practitioner, a medical practitioner, or a movement coach who can look at the body holistically. This is really the only way that you will find a solution for a chronic injury.
And if listeners want to go to a Lino practitioner, where can they find one? Or if someone wants to become a Lino practitioner, where can they find more information?
So we have a website, thelinomethod.com. And on this website, you will find all the information on where we do the courses. We present courses online and we present courses mainly in South Africa in person. And you could also find where all the practitioners are in South Africa. We also have a few practitioners in the UK. We have practitioners in Australia and also in New Zealand. So all this information will be on the website. You'll find it on the website.
Thank you. And now you've had to talk a lot, but may I still ask you a fun question?
Let's hear what you want to ask.
Benita, if you were a creature with really soft paws, what would you be?
I think I would be a bear. A big white bear in the Antarctic that moves softly on that white ice. When I think of big soft paws, I always think of a bear.
And it connects to that whole thing about the shoes that we should be wearing, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I have a fetish, not with shoes, but with feet. I want soft, mobile, flexible, strong feet.
Yes, and this might be the place to mention to the listeners that you have actually been to Everest Base Camp, haven't you? And you can say which shoes you wore then.
That's an interesting one. Now, I would have loved to go all the way to Base Camp, Mariette, but I didn't have the time to go to Base Camp, but I went at least half the way to Namche Bazaar, which is en route to the Everest Base Camp. But it was during our travels that we ended up in Nepal and suddenly thought, well, we are here now, why don't we go and walk this? But I didn't have any walking shoes or hiking boots or anything with me at the moment. And I'm in any case not very fond of hiking boots. And I walked into a small little shop in Nepal and said, do you have a shoe for me, which is a size 7, which has a wide toe box because my toes need to be able to move. I'm used to barefoot shoes. And the boots must be completely flexible. I must be able to twist them completely. I want wool on the inside because it's going to be very cold en route. And then I also want them to be waterproof. And the man looked at me as if, you must be crazy, because all the shoes that they had in that shop were rigid, leather, hard, completely inflexible. And the female shoes were all like about a size 5 or 6. They had nothing of a size 7. But as it always happens in India, Nepal, all those countries, let me phone someone quickly. And a man came into the shop about 20 minutes later, and he handed a shoe to me, which you cannot believe it, a size 7, a wide toe box, wool on the inside, waterproof on the outside, and I can really roll up that boot completely. And I walked terrible mountains, terrible hills, terrible terrain, difficult terrain in those boots, and they were absolutely fantastic. And my body was so happy because I had access to all my proprioceptors underneath my soles of my foot.
That is amazing. Thank you for that last story, Benita, and also for offering such helpful information for those who are passionate about this sport.
It's such a pleasure, Mariette. I mean, sport has always been, because this has been what my career was all about in the beginning, sport is so special to me. And if I see the dedication of athletes and specifically elite sportsmen, it is so important that they are not riddled with injuries and they have access to proper treatment. And I think this will be my passion for the rest of my life.
Certainly. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. If you found this episode insightful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series Calm, Clear, and Helpful is produced by me, with original music by Mart-Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.